You looked at the title of my sermon this morning, you would have seen that it was entitled First Love. There is something special or memorable about the first, isn't there? The first Super Bowl win of the Philadelphia Eagles will be remembered for a long time by a lot of people. Even if the Eagles should go on to win the Super Bowl next year and the year after that and the year after that, everyone will remember the first time. I remember when the Phillies won the World Series first back in 1980. They've won it again in 2008, but I couldn't tell you all the people that were on the team in 2008. I could name everyone in the lineup from 1980. It was memorable because it was the first. For those of you who play music, maybe you remember your first recital. Or if you play a sport, you maybe remember the first game that you played. For those of you that have dated, you remember your first date. You may have had 50 more dates with that person, but you remember the first one, where you were on that first date. I can tell you my first date with my wife, where it was. I think she remembers it as well. Perhaps you remember your first kiss, or your first love, or the first child. Now, maybe women, if you've had many children after your first one, you still remember the first one, don't you? What it was like to be pregnant with that first child, to be pregnant for the first time. You remember that. Or when that first child was born, you remember his first steps, right? Where were you when he first got up and started to walk? You remember that. First time, the first is always memorable. This morning, we'll be looking from Jeremiah chapter 2 at Jeremiah's first sermon. Jeremiah's first sermon. Jeremiah chapter 2, I'll be reading the whole chapter. It's found on page 1170 in your pew Bible. And that's, I'll give you a minute to find that, but let's begin by reading this, Jeremiah's first sermon. Remember, now Jeremiah's number of sermons in Jeremiah, number of chapters in Jeremiah, there are 45 chapters in Jeremiah where the Lord is speaking to Israel. He's speaking to Israel, in particular to Judah, and the first 45 chapters he spends in his message to those people. Now, Jeremiah was a prophet to the nations, and he spoke to the other nations as well, but he really focuses in on Judah. And so let's begin by reading this, Jeremiah chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me, go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem. I remember the devotion of your youth, how as a bride you loved me and followed me through the desert, through a land not sown. Israel was holy to the Lord, the first fruits of his harvest. All who devoured her were held guilty, and disaster overtook them, declares the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, all you clans of the house of Israel. This is what the Lord says. What fault did your fathers find in me that they strayed so far from me? They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They did not ask, where is the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt, who led us through the barren wilderness, through a land of deserts and rifts, a land of drought and darkness, a land where no one travels and no one lives? I brought you into a fertile land to eat its fruit and rich produce. But you came and defiled my land and made my inheritance detestable. The priests did not ask, where is the Lord? Those who deal with the law did not know me. The leaders rebelled against me.
the prophets prophesied by Baal, following worthless idols. Therefore, I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord. I will bring charges against your children's children. Cross over to the coasts of Kittim and look. Send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there has ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed her gods? Yet they are not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glory for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, O heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water. They have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Is Israel a servant, a slave by birth? Why then has he become plunder? Lions have roared. They have growled at him. They have laid waste his land. His towns are burned and deserted. Also, the men of Memphis and Tahpenes have shaved the crown of your head. Have you not brought this on yourselves by forsaking the Lord your God when he led you in the way? Why not? Now, why go to Egypt to drink from the Sihor? And why go to Assyria to drink from the river? Your wickedness will punish you. Your backsliding will rebuke you. Consider then and realize how evil and how bitter it is for you when you forsake the Lord your God. You have no awe of me, declares the Lord Almighty. Long ago you broke off your yoke and tore your bonds. You said, I will not serve you. Indeed, on every high hill and under every spreading tree, you lay down as a prostitute. I had planted you like a choice vine, a sound and reliable stock. How then did you turn against me into a corrupt, wild vine? Although you wash yourself with soda and use an abundance of soap, the stain of your guilt is still before me, declares the sovereign Lord. How can you say, I am not defiled? I have not run after the Baals. See how you behaved in the valley. Consider what you have done. You are a swift she camel running here and there, a wild donkey accustomed to the desert, sniffing the wind in her craving, in her heat. Who can restrain her? Any males who pursue her need not tire themselves at mating time. They will find her. Do not run until your feet are bare and your throat is dry. But you said, it's no use. I love foreign gods, and I must go after them. As a thief is disgraced when he is caught, so the house of Israel is disgraced. They, their kings and their officials, their priests and their prophets, they say to wood, you are my father, and to stone, you gave me birth. They have turned their backs on me and not their faces. Yet when they are in trouble, they say, come and save us. Where then are the gods you made for yourselves? Let them come if they can save you when you are in trouble. For you have many gods, as you have towns, O Judah. Why do you bring charges against me? You have rebelled against me, declares the Lord. In vain I punished your people. They did not respond to correction. Your sword has devoured your prophets like a ravening lion. You of this generation, consider the word of the Lord. Have I been a desert to Israel or a land of great darkness? Do my people say, we are free to roam? We will come to you no more? Does a maiden forget her jewelry? A bride, her wedding garments? Her wedding ornaments? Yet my people have forgotten me, days without number. How skilled you are in pursuing love. Even the worst of women can learn from your ways. On your clothes, men find the lifeblood of the innocent poor, though you did not catch them breaking in. Yet, in spite of all this, you say, I am innocent. He is not angry with me. But I will pass judgment on you because you say, I have not sinned. Why do you go about so much changing your ways? You will be disappointed by Egypt as you were by Assyria. You will leave that place with your hands in your head, for the Lord has rejected those you trust, and you will not be helped by them. If a man divorces his wife and she leaves him and marries another man, should he return to her again? Would not the land be completely defiled? But you have lived as a prostitute with many lovers. Would you now return to me? Declares the Lord. Look up to the barren heights and see, is there any place where you have not been ravished? By the roadside you sat waiting for lovers like a nomad in the desert. You have defiled the land with your prostitution and wickedness. Therefore the showers have been withheld and no spring rains have fallen. You have the brazen look of a prostitute. You refuse to blush with shame. Have you not just called to me, my father, my friend from my youth? Will you always be angry? Will your wrath continue forever? This is how you talk, but you do evil all you can. So what characterizes God's love for his bride? This morning we sang a song, O Perfect Love, all human thought transcending. This was the Father's, God the Lord's, love for his bride. Verse 3, he protected her. He was the perfect husband. He was the covenant-keeping God that kept his promises to his bride. In the book of 2 Peter in the New Testament, 2 Peter 2, verse 19, he characterizes, Israel is characterized this way in her relationship with the Lord. The Lord's relationship to her is characterized this way. You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. Israel was set apart. She was his only love. He loved her. She was set apart. He did not love other nations. He loved his bride, his Israel, his people. Set apart, holy to the Lord. It says here that she was the first fruits of the harvest. The first, the very best, the most beautiful, the most fair. All who sought to harm her, all who devoured her, were held guilty. Those nations that invaded her were held guilty. The Lord was unmerciful to them. This was the Father's love, the Lord's love for his bride. He loved her. He loved her with a perfect love. And what would characterize Israel's love for the Lord? Well, it started out good. It says here in verse 2 that as a bride you loved me. In the beginning, there was love. Followed me through the desert, through a land not sown. Followed the Lord. But somehow, Israel's love had grown cold. And we might even characterize Israel's love for the Lord as worthless. Worthless. Verse 5, they followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. Israel followed other lovers, became worthless herself. Israel had forgotten God. They did not ask, where is the Lord? Verse 6, the Lord who brought us up out of Egypt, the Lord who led us to our inheritance, through the desert to our inheritance, they had forgotten God. Israel's love for God was worthless.
They defiled my land. They made my inheritance detestable, as it says in verse 7. And their leaders led them in it. Their priests, who should have been leading them in the ways of righteousness, who should have been leading them in the worship of the Lord, did not even know the Lord. Their kings also did not know the Lord. Their leaders had rebelled against the Lord. Their prophets had prophesied by Baal. And here we have this word again, verse 8, by following worthless idols. So though the Lord's love for his people was perfect, his people's love for him was worthless. Worthless. So the Lord brings charges against Israel. There's the main charge, which is this: you have not loved me. And then there are specific charges, the specifications to this charge. You have not loved me, and this is how you have not loved me. Notice in verse 9, this is not the first time. Therefore, I bring charges against you again. Israel had gone after other lovers, and there, now she was going after them again. And if we were to read the history of the people of Israel, we would see this, wouldn't we? In the book of Judges, how there was almost this cycle in which Israel followed other lovers and then turned to the Lord, and then followed other lovers and then turned to the Lord. And we see this again in the book of Kings and the book of Chronicles. God, in his commandments, as found in the book of Deuteronomy 5, verses 6 through 10, he says, I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make to yourself an idol in the form of anything. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. Verse 9, I will bring charges against your children's children. What had the people of Israel done? Their children's children, they had brought idols. They had brought other lovers into God's presence. I've asked my children in the past, is jealousy ever good? Is jealousy ever right? Most of the time, not. But there's one time when jealousy is righteous. And it's right here, isn't it? I am a jealous God. I am a jealous God. Your love is only to be for me. My people's love is only to be for its God, not for other lovers. You have not loved me. I think we see this in the passage here, specific charges brought in 10 different ways. Let's see if we can't count them up here. It's 10 ways. Verse 11 and 12. You have not loved me. My people have exchanged their glory for worthless idols. A nation changing its gods. Even the heathen nations around them wouldn't change their gods, but somehow God's people were changing their gods. You have not loved me. You have exchanged the glory of God for worthless idols. Specification number 2, verses 13 through 19. You have not loved me. You have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and dug your own cisterns. Two things there. You've forsaken the spring of living water, and you've dug your own cisterns. Now, we don't live in the desert, so we don't quite understand what springs of living water are, right? But let's just imagine this. In your house, you have a nice line from the Philadelphia Water Department. So imagine that you turned off that water to your house. So no water to shower with, no water to drink. You turned off that water to your house. And you got a bunch of 5-gallon buckets, spackle buckets, left over from when you spackled your house. Maybe still have some spackle in them. In my house, spackle buckets tend to accumulate tools. So tools in them. You took them outside in your yard, and you waited for it to rain. And that was the water that you used. This is the picture, isn't it? In the desert, forsaken the spring of living water for a cracked cistern that doesn't even hold water. This is what Israel had done. Specification number 3. You have not loved me, you have broken off your yoke of service to the Lord and become a prostitute, serving other lovers. As John, as Bob Dylan is often quoted as saying, you got to serve somebody. They would rather serve an unfaithful as a prostitute than serve the Lord. You got to serve somebody. Says, I will not serve you. I will do what I want. Specific charge number 4, verse 21. You have not loved me. You have turned against me and become corrupt. A wild vine. Wild vine. Now, grapes, if you tend them well, if they're tended well, you can even graft on different kinds of grapes to one vine. The Lord had planted Israel expecting a harvest of grapes. And here, she had become a wild vine. There was no harvest. She did what she wanted. Specific charge number 5, verse 22. You have not loved me. You have tried to wash away your guilt. But it remained. My son and I went to the dump yesterday. Ever been to the dump? He asked me whether it smelled before we went there. He had never been before, and he asked me whether it smelled. And I said, oh, it's probably not too bad. It's mostly construction garbage, right? Well, we got there, and that wasn't the case at all. It smelled. In fact, it stank so bad that he said, don't even let him in the house. He's got to take a shower first, right? He's got to wash off that stink. Israel tried to wash off the stink, but they couldn't. They tried to cover up that stain, but they couldn't. Some of you may remember Shakespeare, studying Shakespeare. Lady Macbeth, right, tried to wash out the spot. She wakes up in a dream and has tried to wash. She had murdered her husband and tried to wash that out and couldn't do it. I won't repeat the words here because they probably shouldn't be repeated in a church, but she could not wash out the stain. specific charge number six. You have not loved me. You deny that you are defiled. They deny the sin at all. You're not defiled by running after the Baals. Not defiled by your behavior in the valley. But you are like a swift she camel. You're unreliable. You're like a donkey in heat. Like a donkey in heat chasing other lovers. They don't even have to come to you. You chase them. That's what you're like, O Israel. That's what you're like. You have not loved me. You deny that you are defiled. Specific charge number seven. You have not loved me. You have turned your back on the Lord. You say to wood, you are my father. And to stone, you have given me birth. You have turned your backs on me and not your faces. Turned your back on your first love. You turn your back on your lover. You have not loved me. Specific charge number eight. Verse 30, you have not loved me, you do not respond to correction. Now parents, we love it, don't we, when our children respond to our correction. When they repent from their sins, when they turn from their sins, they turn from what they're doing and they respond to correction. Israel did not respond. Correction. Specific charge number 9, verse 31. You have rejected the Lord, though he has treated you well. You've rejected the Lord, though he has treated you well. The Lord was the perfect husband, but Israel had rejected the Lord. There's nothing quite so painful as being rejected in love, is there? Nothing quite so painful as feeling the rejection of someone that, though you love them, does not love you. That's what the Lord was experiencing here. Israel did not love him, though the Lord loved Israel. Lastly, specific charge number 10, verses 32 and 33. You have not loved me, you have forgotten me, days without number. And to illustrate how ridiculous this is, that Israel could forget the Lord after all the Lord had done for her, this illustration is used. Does a bride forget her wedding ornaments? Does a bride forget her wedding ornaments? I've been to a lot of weddings over the years. Never once did I go to a wedding where the bride wasn't dressed in a beautiful dress and wasn't adorned with wedding ornaments. Doesn't happen, right? Just doesn't happen. Does a bride forget her wedding ornaments? People of God, yesterday there was a great wedding, wasn't there? Yesterday you may have caught some of this. It was on all the channels. You had watched TV. It was the royal wedding, right? Prince Harry and Meghan Markle were married. Royal wedding. We're not British, but we Americans get some enjoyment out of watching weddings. I'm told that when Prince William and Kate Middleton were married, in 2011, that there were 1,900 invitations that the Queen sent out. The wedding yesterday was a little bit more subdued. there was only 600 invitations that were sent out. 600 people that were invited to the wedding ceremony. And if you caught any of this on TV, you might have heard the vows that that Harry and Meghan made. I'll just read the vow that was given. I, Harry, take you, Meghan, to be my wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part, according to God's holy law, in the presence of God, I make this vow. This is the kind of covenant that Jesus makes with his bride, with his people. He invites you, not as one of the 1,900, to observe the ceremony. He invites you to be the bride. He invites you, and he promises to you that he will love and cherish you. Not for the years of time alone, not for till death do you part, but for eternity. You, people of God, are invited to be his bride. O perfect love, all human thought transcending. God has vowed to love his bride, has vowed to love his people. We read an account earlier this morning, at least the first part of the account of the Samaritan woman from Sychar. Jesus invites her to taste of the spring of living water, to drink of the spring of living water. And we didn't read this, but if you were to go on and read the rest of the story, you would find out that she had had many lovers. Jesus tells her to go get her husband. And she says, well, I have no husband. And he says, well, you're right, you have no husband. You have had five husbands, and the man you're living with right now is not your husband. Come. But she met, didn't she? She met five men. She met a sixth man. But then she met the seventh man. The seventh man who loved her back with an undying love, who invited her into relationship with him. And what does she say? Her last words that are recorded in the story, she says, come, meet the man who told me everything I ever did. Could he be the Christ? Come, people of God, to that spring of water, be refreshed by the bridegroom who calls you to come. You are the bride of Christ. First love. Never forsake your first love.